text 46 from Canto 3, chapter 13. The chapter is almost finished. So the sages from Tapa, Jhana, and Brahmaloka have just finished their prayers to Lord Varaha. And this Canto 3 is narrated by Maitreya to Vidura, so Maitreya continues. The Lord being thus worshipped by all the great sages and transcendentalists touched the earth with its hooves and placed it on the water. Purport. The earth was placed on the water by His inconceivable potency. The Lord is all powerful, and therefore He can sustain the huge planets either on the water or in the air, as He likes. The tiny human brain cannot conceive how these potencies of the Lord can work. A man can give some vague explanations of the laws by which such phenomena are made possible, but actually the tiny human brain is unable to conceive of the activities of the Lord, which are therefore called inconceivable. Yet the frog philosophers still try to give some imaginary explanation. Text 47. In this manner, the personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, the maintainer of all living entities, raised the earth from within the water, and having placed it afloat on the water, he returned to his own abode. Purport. The personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, descends by his will to the material planets in his innumerable incarnations for particular purposes, and again goes back to his own abode. When he descends, he is called an avatar, because avatar means one who descends. Neither the Lord himself nor his specific devotees who come to this earth are ordinary living entities like us. Text 48. If one hears and describes in a devotional service attitude this auspicious narration of Lord Bor, which is worthy of description, the Lord, who is within the heart of everyone, is very pleased. Report. In his various incarnations, the Lord appears, acts, and leaves behind him a narrative history which is as transcendental as he himself. Every one of us is fond of hearing something wonderful, some wonderful narration, but most stories are neither auspicious nor worth hearing because they are of the inferior quality of material nature. Every living entity is of superior quality, spirit, soul, and nothing material can be auspicious for him. Intelligent persons should therefore hear personally and cause others to hear the descriptive narrations of the Lord's activities, for that will destroy the pangs of material existence out of his causeless mercy only. The Lord comes to this earth and leaves behind his merciful activities so that the devotees may derive transcendental benefit. I want to make reference to, there's just two more verses left, but I'll do that another time. Commentary. By Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And there's one also by Sridhar Swami. Here's Sridhar Swami's explanation. Well, Vishwanath refers to Sridhar Swami. by pleasing the Lord, what is difficult to attain becomes easy to attain. But what is the use of such benedictions? They are insignificant. Lava mabihi. One should not worry that one's worship of the Lord will not bring fruit. For those who engage in bhakti without any other desires, ananya drishtya, the Lord himself arranges the attainment of his own abode. Because the Lord is in the heart of the devotees, he knows the pure bhakti of the devotee. This is Sridhar Swami's explanation. So the Prabhupada's purport is saying it one way and this is saying it the other way. That is, the Lord appears to give subject matter which is not different than him for the devotee, for the devotees of upliftment. Certainly the sages, and in the commentary it specifically says, and it makes sense, when Lord Varaha was shaking the water, he was just on the surface of the Garbhadak ocean, and the residents of Jana, Tapa, and Satyaloka, they're up. So the sprinkling went up, not down. And they're saying, oh, you're so merciful, you sent some sprinkles up to touch us, to benedict us. But it's not just the sprinkles, it's his pastimes, and then it's the, you know, the kata. So Maitreya is explaining to Vidura just by hearing this, or describing this, and of course, trying to understand what can our understanding capacity accomplish for the unlimited and inconceivable Supreme. But wanting and striving like that, then something, according to our capacity and according to the Lord's mercy, then we can understand something. It's a paradox, but it's not. The paradox of the tiny living entity with all of our tininess trying to understand that which is unlimited. It's not possible. We can't understand the unlimitedness of the unlimited. We can appreciate there's unlimitedness of the unlimited and appreciate something. And someone else appreciates something, and someone else appreciates something according to their capacity and their loving exchange with the Supreme Lord. And then we come back again and read some passages from Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, and we see or hear or understand things we didn't understand before, because the Lord is unlimited and we're limited. So it's just a relationship, but that relationship is the essence of bhakti. And when one hears the benediction that's being told, is when one hears this narration in pure devotion, then the Lord comes and carries the living entity to the spiritual world. We don't need to worry. But we worry anyways. But we don't need to worry, with the confidence that the Lord is very merciful and he is recognizing our loving service. So that's the appreciation of the sages, that's appreciation of Maitreya. It's one of the essential, just going back to our Dandak Forest Yatra, it's one of the essential teachings of Sharanagati that the Lord comes. The Lord goes to see the sages because they want. And so he comes. He doesn't have to. He's not obliged. But they want, and he's reciprocating with their want. There's two very nice stories that I've been thinking of in this connection, so I'll just share. I was in Vrindavan for some time just before coming back to the U.S. and meditating on what the Vrindavan Yatra would be like. And so there was Dina Bandhu was going to be with us, yay, for some days, not the whole thing. And of course, he likes taking devotees to Vrindakund. So to go to Vrindakund, you first go to Yavat and then Tirkadamba and then Vrindakund for lunch. I mean, that's the Dina Bandhu program. So I said, well, you know, there's Pavan Sarovar and there's other, so we can come back and do Pavan Sarovar. So Tirkadamba, there's a very nice story. I don't know if Dina Bandhu tells this story, but there was a Babaji who for a long time lived at Tirkadamba, praying to Rupa Goswami for Rupa Goswami's mercy and serving Krishna Balaram, because you may know in Tirkadamba there's a Krishna Balaram deity. Very beautiful. Very beautiful. So I don't know how long ago the sadhu was there, but worshipping Krishna Balaram. And he had this desire. He wanted to see Prabhupada writes in the Dhruva Maharaj story, it's good to desire to see the Lord, but one should be patient, be qualified, and then see the Lord at his pleasure. So this Babaji, he wanted to see and be with and serve in that way that his, you know, spiritual senses could perceive Krishna Balaram. And it wasn't happening, and it wasn't happening, and he was becoming discouraged. So one day, it became too much. He was leaving Tirkadamba on his way to go to Mayapur with the understanding that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was most merciful. Like that question that fellow asked last night about, you know, Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya are Mahavadanyaya and his good brother. So let's just go there. So this devotee, Babaji, decided, hey, I'm going to go to Mayapur. And as he was leaving, two cowherd boys, one white like milk and the other black like a monsoon cloud, approached him and said, Babaji, where are you going? He said, I'm frustrated. Krishna Balaram will show me. He said, well, if you leave, then who's going to feed us? Who's going to care for us? And he fainted. He didn't leave. But he wasn't seeing, but, you know, they were accepting. Or the nice story of the brahmana that was very elderly and he couldn't, so he was doing manasa puja and he burned his thumb when testing the sweet rice. It's all the conclusion of that story is a Vaikuntha Vimana descended to take him back to Vaikuntha. We may not see the Lord, but he's seeing us. And there's another nice Vrindavan story. One blind man was going every day to Banki Vihari, but he was blind. He'd sit in the back. He's blind, can't see. And so finally somebody asked him, why are you coming every day? You're blind. He said, I may not be able to see the Lord, but the Lord can see me. So I'm coming so he can see me. And I've come to worship him. And there's a link to a temple, like a story of a deity that goes like this. Vyasa Tirtha who was a predecessor acharya to Madhavendra Puri and Ishwara Puri and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Vyasa Tirtha, by the side of the river that flows in Hampi, he was worshipping Ram. And as he was worshipping Ram, there was a rock. And from the rock came a monkey. And the monkey sat there and watched him do his puja. And when his puja was over, the monkey went back to the rock, inside the rock. Not a cave, but inside the rock. And this happened 9 days in a row. And on the ninth evening, something like this, I may not be telling it precisely, but Vyasa Tirtha had a dream. And in the dream, there was the rock. And in the dream, he drew on the rock a form of Hanuman and a yantra, Hanuman yantra, or something like that. And then when he woke up, there was the rock. And the rock showed the Hanuman deity and the yantra, etc., etc. And it was Hanuman sitting there holding beads, chanting Ram's name. That was in his dream. And then when he came back, there was the deity. So there's a temple where that rock or the deity of Hanuman is worshipped. So these are nice narrations. That may not happen to us. That's quite okay. We should know that in our chanting and our hearing and in our worshipping these non-different than Krishna forms, he's there. And he's hearing. He's receiving. Now so much depends, not is he going to reciprocate with our devotion, but rather what's the quality of our devotion? With what quality are we engaged in chanting, hearing, and worshipping? And to that degree there's reciprocation, because that's the nature of the personality of Godhead. So that's what's being said here in the verse, and then similarly the commentary. We need not worry. Will the Lord see my service? Will he see and accept my devotion, accept my offerings? We need not worry like that. And in his own way, in his own time, as he desires, he'll make himself available for us. And the availability can simply be through sound. The narrations, because the narrations are none different. And that's worship of the personality of Godhead, who he accepts just by hearing those narrations. And thus, the coverings become purified. Again, depending upon our regard for that sound or our regard for the deity or our regard for the mantra. It's a relationship. One other point is Varaha's returning. So it's like this puzzle. From where did he come and where did he go? Mm-hmm. In one sense, Vishnu is everywhere, just like Lord Srinadeva. He's everywhere. Where's Vishnu? He's everywhere. Is he in the pillar? He's in the pillar. He's everywhere. He's in the pillar and he's everywhere. He's everywhere. So where did he come from? Where did he go to? Or when Maharaj Parikshit was saved in the womb of Uttara by the prayers of Uttara to Krishna, Krishna came and protected her. And after he protected her, he went back to his abode. Where did he come from? Where did he go to? And it's in one sense, it's irrelevant, because he's everywhere. He can come from wherever he wants and he can go to wherever he wants. At the same time, he has his abode, but his abode is not a three-dimensional place. We think of things, you know, in places in three-dimensional space. And he's not a three-dimensional space personality. He's a transcendental personality. He is all-pervasive. And, you know, our mind doesn't comprehend that. What's all-pervasive? Well, from the limited mind, that's the all-pervasive Brahman. That he's an all-pervasive Paramatma, and he's all-pervasive Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan. That's not possible in three-dimensional space. But for him, it's not at all difficult through the agency of his inconceivable potencies. You know, referring back to his investing his potencies through his tusks, his investing his potencies through his hoof, touching the earth. He doesn't need to touch the earth so the earth can float. You know, what ocean is it that can support the earth floating? What capacity? Of course, there's one version of Ramayana that the monkeys are writing Ram's name and the rocks are floating. But you don't have to write Ram's name so the rocks, if he wants, the rock can float. He makes the principle of their being sustained. He makes the principle of their... There's explanations of the planets floating in space that go... It was mentioned in an earlier purport of the law of gravity. And there's other explanations. The Vedic explanation is the potency of the personality of Godhead. Or, I came across it again yesterday, the ropes of air that hold the planets in their place in the sky, and because of the movement of Dhruva, the planets move. Well, that's a different law than the law of gravity. So however scientists may use their senses to measure gravity, an object falling because of the law of gravity, mass and the larger mass and the smaller mass is attracted to the larger mass and whatever that physics calculation is, we were discussing yesterday, that's observable phenomena. And using the observable phenomena to measure observable events, then you can come up with an explanation. But what's behind that? What's behind that? What sustains the observable phenomena? Well, it's not observable. So it can't be known by that method. It can't be disproved, but it can't be proved. So how do we know what's behind or what's supporting the observations of the senses? What's giving capacity to the senses to function, period, what to speak of. So the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Vedas, are giving us that picture. And it's a fascinating picture. Last thing for this morning is there's a little booklet, pamphlet or something like that, published by the Bhaktivedanta Institute because they received some funding for Professor Henry Stapp to take a sabbatical and go study Sankhya philosophy to see if it's falsifiable from whatever his knowledge is of science. So he spent whatever the time, month and a half, you know, 12 hours a day, very, you know, intense personality, and concluded there's nothing in Sankhya philosophy that's falsifiable from empiric data. Doesn't prove it's right, that it can't be falsified from empiric data, to at least to his knowledge and study. So why mention that? Because there are explanations of things that are not observable through the senses, the physical observations. It's other than physical observations. So is there something that's observable through physical observations that says it can't be so? Doesn't prove it's right. But so the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, Dharma Praujita Kaitavotra Paramo Nirmat Saranam Satam, it's explicitly not going to include such information. And this specifically, that passage is speaking of Dharma, but you know, Dharma, Dutti, and observable things. It's that the Bhagavatam is a transcendental literature. Now, transcendental literature, or an explanation of transcendental things, a transcendental explanation of things, doesn't mean it contradicts our observations. It's just an explanation of what's behind our observations. It's different than our reasoning process says this is the reason why events are the way that they are, like gravity or whatever. Objects floating. The personality of Godhead has potencies, and he, with his potencies, it can float rocks, or he can float the earth in water. And what's the water? That's another question. An ocean of what? You know, we think of water or oceans as to be water, and water has its laws of nature. Rocks sink. Anyway. To understand the science behind, the spiritual science behind the explanations of the Vedas, takes higher consciousness. And otherwise, you're puzzled. Or just reject it. So the puny brain of the scientist is Prabhupada's phrase. Then there's the brain of Vyasa, and there's the brain of Rama, and there's the brain of Krishna, Vishnu. So who wants to compare the two? Many times Prabhupada would speak about his discussion with Professor Katovsky, saying, what's the difference between you and me? You have authority and I have an authority. Yours is Lenin and mine is Krishna. So we're doing the same thing. So what's the problem with accepting an authority? Now we can take a look at who's a better authority to accept, like Krishna or Lenin. But the principle is the same. You accept what Lenin says. I accept what Krishna says. We're doing the same thing. There's an authority. We're functioning in the same principle. And Krishna is the supreme authority. For you, Lenin is the topmost authority. And so our Vedic approach is accepting Krishna as the source of perfect knowledge, just like it's said twice. The form of Varaha is the personified Vedas. And then there's the Vedas. So we accept that authority with using our faculties of reason and logic, but we accept that authority. And by accepting of that authority, hearing faithfully, then gradually consciousness can be elevated. We can understand things we couldn't previously understand. gradually. Krishna, Krishna. Discussion? Yeah.
Yeah, I have a couple of questions, if it's okay. So, first one is, how is the devotional service look like in different lokas? Is it like the same chanting and hearing, or is it kind of different and different planetary?
Well, there's not a whole lot of information about that, but you can read Brihad Bhagavatamrita and find out what they do in general Maharloka and then in Tapaloka, and you know, what they do is a little different. Yeah. But the principle is the same, the form is different. Okay.
The other question that I had was, from Brahma Samhita and other scriptures, we understand there are different in the spiritual world we have different abodes like Ayodhya, then Dwarka, and so is there some for even Varaha and
in Vaikuntha.
In Vaikuntha, okay.
It's one of the Vaikuntha planets. He has his planet.
And how do the residents...
I don't know. They worship him. They're very happy worshiping. But you know what that looked like.
Sure. Thank you.
Yes?
I have two questions from
two questions.
From yesterday.
Two questions from yesterday.
When Nityananda spoke to them, and after that, did Chaitanya ever travel with him, or only in that, when he went to Jagannath Puri?
When Lord Nityananda broke Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's danda, did Lord Nityananda ever travel with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu after that?
Yes.
So she was asking.
Yes. He forgave him. It was a pastime.
And my second question is, while Saravana Bhattacharya was arguing with Gopinathacharya, did Saravana Bhattacharya make an offense?
Did Saravana Bhattacharya make an offense because he was arguing with
Gopinathacharya? No, they were chummy.
Like when he was saying that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was not the super perfect thing.
Well, it wasn't an offense. It was a misunderstanding due to prior association. So it's not an offense. It was not theistic. But he wasn't like a hardcore atheist. He was just misguided through bad association, and through good association he became changed. Okay. Anything else?
I was thinking that all these topics, as you mentioned, are beyond our sense perception.
Yeah.
And also, to the degree we are ourselves situated on the platform of devotional service, and to the degree our hearing matures, we are able to comprehend. Then, when we are coming in contact with new people, we know that things will be only gradually comprehensible.
Mm-hmm.
So when they ask a particular question which requires more elevation of consciousness, so we cannot satisfy them basically. I mean, we have to just explain on some logical or reasoning level.
I got it. So,
but then
They don't accept because their consciousness is not sufficiently elevated.
So we cannot actually satisfy them because it requires some work on their part as well.
Yeah. Our assignment is not to satisfy everybody. Our assignment is to, as far as our capacity is, transparently represent, but also be sensitive to the person, the audience that we're speaking to help them understand. And so a big part of it is faith. So it depends on the person and the circumstance. You know, one might spend a little bit of time just describing that, you know, the means of knowing something. Direct perception, reason and logic, and hearing from authority, and that's the best way to understand, although it may not match what our senses say, what our reasoning says. And use the example of the bone and a conch shell and cow dung. So on the basis of the acceptance of authority, then we can understand things that are otherwise, that seem contradictory or beyond our capacity to know. And you know, the best of knowers, the scientists, they're always changing their perspective. It's just the nature of the experimentation of science. So where's the end point of knowing? Will there ever be an end point of knowing by that methodology? So here's an alternative. So our present, so it depends on the person, in the circumstance. Yeah.
Maharaj, you were saying that you know, Krishna carries the living entity to the spiritual world, and we don't need to worry. So.
Well, I didn't exactly say carries us to the spiritual world.
That was
he comes.
In the context of some sages or some devotees.
Okay.
So in our case, Maharaj, I realize that I do worry a lot. And that worry comes from my own not having enough confidence in my own devotional service and the quality. And that also leads to lack of confidence in the fact that Krishna is seeing or is feeling whatever I'm doing. So I think my question is, yeah, I have to improve with the quality for sure, but seems sometimes what makes you do, or
well, the second part, you know, Krishna's accepting our, even, you know, even in our shortcomings, Krishna's accepting. You're a parent, so you're not judging the dependents. You're encouraging and nurturing, and you're doing what parents do, and you're not like judging. You're using your intelligence to see how the next step. So Krishna's like that. Where does that ability come in its perfect form? Krishna accepts, and Krishna's helping us. So now back to the first part, which is deficiency from my side. And there's this acceptance and progress message. This is my position, let me progress. And let me progress in a way that's realistic, and make a plan to progress in a way that's realistic, and then stick with it. And even there's unsteadiness in sticking with it, but continue to progress with faith in what this is meant to take me to. According to Rupa Goswami's definition of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, intrinsic in the Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti is faith. That although it's imperfect and etc., etc., shortcomings from my side, the method, the internal potency method, will carry me to Krishna. Or bhava stage will come. It's a little bit, say it negatively, a little bit like someone that, because we were discussing it, someone that's in the stage of depression. All they see is their shortcomings. Oh, I'm no good, and I'm inadequate, I'm insufficient, and you know, all of that means there isn't an effort to improve, because what's the use, because I'm lowly and, you know, blah, blah, blah. That's depression. And one of the things to do to help a person who's in that state is, you know, not exactly, like someone said in one of the classes, pick yourself up by your bootstraps, but you make some effort and depend upon Krishna. And it's a two. Make some effort, modest, and depend upon Krishna. And depending upon Krishna can very well mean depending upon the association of Krishna's devotees. But so it's not just somebody, please pick me up. It's effort and mercy combined. So with my deficiencies, Krishna knows, let me make some effort and depend upon Krishna to help me overcome my deficiencies. And keep doing that. Because he's accepting. Although I may not recognize it moment to moment, but his nature is he's kind and he's accepting. And he's doing so through Radharani, who's very kind. So, that's the faith, not exactly faith in oneself, it's faith in the bhakti process. And let me make the effort that I'm capable of making. It's not an overconfidence, and it's not, you know, lack of confidence. It's acceptance and progress. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.